All right. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Unleashing DY. We've got a super, super special guest today on our fourth episode. We have Rich from XNet. He is the CEO, and he's here to join us today to chat about his incredible project, talk about the DY landscape a little bit, and a lot of the things that they are strategically thinking about. I think it's going to be a super interesting chat. So welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Awesome, Tyler. It's great to be here.
I'm super glad we got a chance to chat. We chatted a bit offline, but the first time I listened to one of the Twitter spaces that you were hosting regarding your project, I was super interested. You had such a compelling and interesting viewpoint on the industry with your background working at Google X and having some history that wasn't quite DY related per se, but it was informative of what's sort of going on in your world right now. So why don't we jump off with this? Can you give us a little background about who you are, what you're doing, how you got into DY more broadly, and then and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I'm going to take us back, kind of way back now. Imagine the early 2000s, when I was a graduate student of the MIT Media Lab. Imagine me, hair even longer than it is now, and wearing a black trench coat and a custom wearable computer. And I was a cypherpunk before we had crypto as we know it today. And I was one of those folks who's like, man, you know, this technology is going to change everything. So at that time, I was mostly known as a wearable computing researcher. And I was like, imagine a future where we'd have this technology that would be like always with us and always connected. And of course, you know, now Apple Watch and so forth, and people are like, yeah, not terribly exciting. Right. But at the time, you know, there were really big questions around, well, of course, you know, how do we do that connectivity? How do we deal with aspects of privacy, right? There's many, many questions. And it sort of started my journey in the direction of thinking about communications, thinking about, you know, cryptography, mostly at that time as a way of proving identity and privacy. That was really important. Well, fast forward, a number of years, started a company in consumer electronics, got wiped out by the Great Recession in 2008, which really sucked, by the way. You know, it's terrible to be a CEO and to have to lay off your friends because you couldn't get the money in, right? They were doing great. I just couldn't get the money in. I mean, yes, global recession, everything. But it was an opportunity for me to join Apple. And I joined a secret research team at Apple that I can't tell you anything about, but it was awfully interesting. And it's where I learned a bunch of stuff about how to do both, you know, consumer electronics and also like mobile technology, right? And then went from Apple to joining Google X in the early days, where I started working on early stage innovation at Google X. And shortly after I got there, I co-founded Project Loon, which maybe some of your listeners have heard about. It was this really ambitious attempt to build basically a decentralized wireless network in the stratosphere. We didn't have crypto incentives at that time.
Sure.
But it's actually very reflective of kind of the modern sort of DY ethos. We said, hey, there's a big problem with connectivity in lots of places in the world. Let's put up this fleet of balloons, right, that will talk to each other in a mesh network, that'll talk to ground stations to offload data and provide phone service to folks. And you know what? People said, this is crazy. There's no way you can do that. It'll never work. They were wrong.
Right.
We made it work. In fact, that odd thing in the wall over my shoulder that you can see behind me, that's that clock. It's actually made from the top plate of one of the Loon balloons.
That's awesome.
Huge vehicles about the size of that supposed Chinese spy balloon, by the
right.
way. So if you want to have a picture in your mind, think that, but for providing, you know, LTE communications and not for whatever the heck that thing was doing.
Right.
So the thing was, we built this network and we kind of built it in the way, you know, you as a thoughtful network engineer would do it these days. It's an awesome data network because that's what people want. You know what? Nobody bought it.
Right.
So our market was the tier one mobile operators, the folks on the ground, you know, like here in the US, it would be like AT&T and T-Mobile, you know, it might be Safaricom in different parts of sub-Saharan Africa, right? They wouldn't turn on our network. Unless there was a natural disaster, and then they turned it on and it worked great, but they would turn it off right afterwards. And the reason was we built the wrong kind of network. You'd think a data network is what everybody needs, right? Well, it turns out it's a matter of both law and also kind of business practice and so forth, that data networks aren't what mobile operators want. They need a true mobile network that provides a bunch of state mandated services and also operates with their backend billing systems and all that stuff, right?
Sure.
And so Loon was not successful, not because the network didn't work, not because the technology didn't work, but because we basically kind of built the wrong thing. We were like, you know, the veggie burger vendors, you know, at the hamburger convention, right? We had a great product. We thought it was a better product.
Yeah.
But we were dealing with all these meat vendors and you know, McDonald's was like, I can't sell a veggie burger. You know, what are you talking about? I mean, obviously, I think McDonald's now has an Impossible Burger, but think a few years ago, right?
Sure.
You know, it was the wrong product market fit. And the reason this is important, and the reason I'm telling you all this history, is because if we fast forward now to XNet, XNet is actually, in many ways, kind of the result of the insights that we gained from that, right?
Mm.
We're building a true mobile network, right? And we're now using the amazing power of crypto incentives to drive its deployment. So we think that we have learned the right lessons from the pioneers of DY, right? Hey, you know, crypto incentives can work to sure. get your radios out there. And we've learned the right lessons, I think, from say Project Loon, but also from the challenges that other DY projects, let's say like Helium, have had in getting paid data on the networks. So we're trying to build the true mobile network backend powered by the crypto incentives front end as a way to drive the rapid growth of what we think is going to be, you know, the next great true mobile network, providing service initially here in the US and then all around the world.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's such an interesting backstory because it's incredibly applicable. It really was the first, call it large-scale DUI project. So there is, I'm sure, an incredible amount of lessons learned that are affecting XNet. So what was the catalyst for actually starting the project? Was it after Project Loon, you thought, gosh, there's just a better way and this needs to be solved? Was there some other sort of system of events that said, I'm going to go out and I'm going to start this project?
Yeah. So honestly, Loon was really disappointing. You know, I led that project for the first 3 years. I handed it off and then I was doing other things and got to kind of from a distance sort of watch the trajectory of that project. But, you know, I'm passionate about a bunch of things and, you know, climate change is one of the areas I've worked in, but also crypto. So after being at MIT and of course, reading the Bitcoin white paper and so forth in, you know, around 2015, 2016, I really got excited about the future of crypto. And I started, you know, mining crypto in my garage with solar power. And I was actually trying to convince Google to get in some crypto stuff. And
oh, really?
I told them no one. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
It went about as well as you might have expected.
Sure,
at one point,
sure.
I was at a leadership event, and basically, I was pulled aside, and Google's CFO Ruth told me under no uncertain terms that if I did anything to get Alphabet regulated as a bank holding company, she was going to kill me. And I think she meant it literally. I don't think that was metaphorical. But
oh my gosh,
yeah. So you know. But let's face it, it's, you know, crypto has had a kind of interesting path to acceptance. And now there is really interesting stuff going on at Alphabet in the crypto space, I'm told. But regardless, I got interested in crypto. I became an Ethereum developer, worked on some projects, you know, in the sort of DeFi space for a bit. But, you know, about a year ago, I had been hired as a consultant around some high altitude connectivity stuff.
Okay.
For a project that was prototyping rural remote connectivity in Africa, and these were really solid telco folks, and we started talking about, you know, what you could do in the space, and they were being paid by another project that I'm not going to mention right now because I wasn't terribly impressed with how the reality or the depth of that project,
okay.
But it was a crypto powered connectivity project, at least nominally. They sort of had a utility token, except I couldn't tell where the utility was, and they didn't really seem to have a plan and so forth. But I said, but you know what? There's something real here. Like, we could do this right. we know how to make mobile networks work. Crypto incentives absolutely work. You know, and we could say, look at Helium, right? You know, we could say, look at Pollen. Let's do this, but let's do this for real, building a true mobile network back end. Because if we do that, then we have access to this really valuable revenue stream. Because, you know, if we solve the connectivity problems of the mobile network operators, just here in the US, like here in the US is a $300 billion industry and everybody's connectivity sucks. If we can light up focused, you know, network footprint with high value 4.9 5G footprint and basically resell it to them, we'll get tons of money, right, to drive the growth of the network. And then we can provide service to everybody, right? We can let anybody roam onto that network. We can take money from their mobile network operators, right? And that will drive our growth. And then we can give big chunks of that money back to the community that's deploying our equipment in the form of crypto incentives. Like all this will work. And so that's where XNet came from. It was the observation that if you built the right kind of network with the right kind of decentralized incentives, right kind of crypto incentives for deployment, it was possible to kind of put all the pieces together and start driving true connectivity, true paid connectivity in DY. And that's something that has not really happened to date. As your listeners probably know, there have been these really cool efforts at building these networks, but kind of connecting the network with paid data has always been a challenge.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And just hearing about all the components that you are thinking through, we'll get into that a little bit later in terms of the incentives and trying to build the right model for the network to scale. But one of the things that I think is so interesting about you in particular is that you've got a robust expertise and knowledge base around some of the different ways these technologies have been deployed. You touched on a little bit with what you were doing at Project Loon. When you're looking at the DY landscape and you've made a stake in the ground, you've put a stake in the ground with respect to how you're building at XNet, what are, just for our listeners who are trying to understand, so what are sort of the broad strokes, big category technology bases that people have attempted? And what are you doing in particular that is different that's going to help you be successful? Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that's that right. for us?
Sure, absolutely. So think way back to the beginnings of Helium, right? And you know, Helium thought, you know what, IoT is really going to be incredibly important. And a great way to connect IoT devices is a technology called LoRaWAN, which is this low frequency, kind of long distance, low data rate communications network. And then Helium had the brilliant insight that they could use crypto incentives to drive the deployment of a network like this. And, right. and that was amazing. And of course, to do it, they had to build their own freaking L1. Like, I mean, this is a heroic thing and figure everything out from scratch, right?
Yeah.
So one piece of technology, of course, that you know I'm touching on here is you know kind of the blockchain foundations. Like Helium had to have the insight that blockchains could be a thing to use for this application, the incentives could work. And so obviously that's an important consideration. You know, what sort of platform on a blockchain do you want to build on? Without going into too much in the way of like how we got there, XNet is choosing to build on Polygon because I really think that if you were starting from scratch right now in the modern world as we are, you'd want to choose some high performance, you know, low gas cost, you know, robust, scalable network. And although I love Solana, I think Solana is technically really interesting. And I got a bunch of friends who are really into Solana, and that's where Helium is migrating to, right?
Right.
We decided that as conservative engineers, Polygon is just it's the conservative choice. It's Ethereum, virtual machine based. You know, it's the most scalable, robust thing out there right now. So again, we made this choice around the base blockchain technology of Polygon to be really, really conservative, right? And meet our performance and low gas cost requirements. So that's one piece. Another piece let's talk about is kind of radio technology. And many people think about the radio as being like the spectrum that it operates in and sort of the over-the-air modulation protocols, right? So in the kind of the modern world of kind of wide area communications for mobile devices, we're mostly talking about LTE and its descendants. We're talking about sort of 4G and 5G LTE. And that's really important because if you want to provide service to devices that aren't just IoT, If you want to provide services to devices like this, then you need to be able to speak in those protocol bands. And of course, sure. Wi-Fi is another radio technology you can use, right?
Right.
So here in the US, something really cool happened a couple of years ago. Access to an amazing spectrum band, band 48, opened up inside a regulatory framework called CBRS, which basically lets anyone who's willing to play inside certain rules utilize this band. What's so cool about that is you can actually do LTE over this band. You can talk to these devices. You can build your own private LTE networks, right?
Right.
And that allows, and these devices, literally, like the phone in your pocket speaks on band 48, right? That's incredibly powerful. So that meant that all of a sudden there's a way to actually like provide mobile services to people with the phones they already own in a way that the big spectrum license holders can't control. So the kind of the band and the spectrum is another important piece. But what many folks don't really appreciate is it's not just like, the modulation scheme and the radio band. There's something called a network core that sits behind that as well. And you can think of the network core as being like, it's like the protocol stack. It's like, whatever computer you're on right now, maybe you're an Android or a Linux geek. Well, there's this very, very well-tested TCP/IP protocol stack sitting at the bottom of that kind of network stack. And then on top of that, there's a bunch of other things. There's SSL, there's DNS, there's a bunch of other things. So think of the network core as being kind of like that, but for the much more complicated kind of chaotic world of wide area mobile communications. This deals with things like handoffs and signal strength and dealing with the various control connections as well as the data connections and all of that stuff. So these network cores are much more complicated than the protocol, than the TCP/IP stack in your Linux machine. And they're the first layer of what you might think of as being this whole telecommunication system that's kind of in the back end, all this back end plumbing. Now, the reason I'm going on and on about a network core is because it's really freaking important. And to reiterate something I said before, XNet's business model, right, is about, basically generating tasty revenue by providing true mobile service, right? We actually create network footprint and we effectively resell it to the tier ones. To do that, we have to be interoperable with them, right? We have to support all of their stuff, which means you actually have to have a standards compliant, high performance network core to make this all work. Now, here's the thing. Other DY projects selected a really awesome open source thing called Magma as the foundation of their projects, so the network core. Magma was never designed for mobile networks. It was designed for data networks. And it was designed, it initially got started at Facebook, was this really great, ambitious project to kind of re-engineer how network cores work. It was never really built for standards compatibility. So at XNet, right from the very beginning, we looked at Magma. We decided, this piece, we've talked about, the blockchain, Polygon. We talked about kind of the band and RF modulation, 4G, 5G, band 48. But this piece is not going to be Magma. It can't be Magma. We have to have a proper standards compliant network core that will actually interoperate with the whole telco world if we're going to get paid data on our networks. Right. So that's another like Lego brick that we plug in.
Yeah.
And then behind that, I'm sorry, there's so many pieces, but it's behind it's a complicated thing.
Right.
There's the back end mobile network services, and think of these things as like billing. You need to be able to do billing and accounting. You need to be able to handle things like SMS messages. Right. Which seem like they're simple. There's got to be a standard for that. Actually, there's no standard for SMS. It's bizarre. It's things like if you're going to be a mobile network operator, you have to let the FBI monitor calls on your network. I'm sorry, it's not optional. You have to have lawful intercept, right?
Wow.
You have to support localization of these devices for enhanced 911. Again, not an optional thing. Your network has to support that, right? And if you don't support all of those things, somebody like T-Mobile is not going to roam onto your network, right? Because you know what? They're legally required to support those things, right? Now, they may do a data offload with you, but they can't actually support roaming. Now, why am I going on and on about data offload versus roaming? I might be able to get in a crowded market, which is maxed out in terms of capacity, think like Manhattan, I might be able to get 10 or maybe 20 cents a gigabyte by providing data offload, right? If I'm a network provider.
Sure.
I can get $1 to $2 per gig if I can actually provide true roaming, mobile roaming. Okay.
Wow.
I get 5 to 10 times as much per unit data, per gigabyte, if I can offer these services. So again, that's what we're doing at XNet. We have plugged together, right? These different elements. We've plugged together the radio and the modulation and the network core and the back-end services. And then of course, with the DY incentives, and I haven't even gotten to the incentives, we just talked about the blockchain,
yeah,
to try to create this solution, which then allows all these pieces to fit together for the sole purpose of having a great big spigot of money start pouring in from these mobile network operators. And here's the really cool thing for you. 40 cents out of every dollar of that money, we use to buy our token off the net, off the market, and burn it, right? And so that's how we actually share that revenue with our deployment partners, right? So now we're talking about the tokenomics a little bit here, sure, too. But all these pieces have to work together in order for this whole thing to go. So short question, complicated answer, but all these pieces are essential. If you get any one of these pieces wrong, you're going to have problems. And we've had the great benefit of learning from the projects that have come before us, but as a good friend of mine, a lawyer, likes to say, right, settlers get rich, pioneers get shot.
Yeah.
So at XNet, we see ourselves as being, you know, settlers and not pioneers. We mad props to the pioneers out there. Helium, we love you. Thank you for showing us the way. But at the same time, we think there's real lessons to be learned. And we see ourselves as filling a different niche, again, focusing on this true mobile service niche. And we hope to get rich, and we hope to help our partners get rich as a result.
Yeah, it's incredibly fascinating because it's often glossed over how complex the actual problem is, because there are so many moving parts and you really have to be a bit of a subject matter expert on many of them in order to fit them together appropriately to be able to scale and be successful. Like you mentioned, one of the other things that was interesting that I've been just sort of inferring from listening and reading and conversations is that it's more than just the core. There's other sort of implementation strategies, and specifically your cluster strategy is really an integral component to how you're going to begin monetizing the network. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and how that's really critical to your success?
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is a piece that's as important, I think, as anything else that I've mentioned, right? So here's the thing. If we were in the business of just selling radios, we'd say, oh yeah, put a radio anywhere you want and turn it on. Great, awesome. Thank you. We'll just take your money. XNet is not in that business. We really don't make money. Much money at all from selling our radios. In fact, we want other people ideally to sell these radios. We still have to like sell you the gateway, but we're happy if other people sell you the radios, right?
Sure.
What we're in the business of is building high quality carrier grade network footprint. And what does that mean? That means that our radios have to be set up very specifically to provide really great coverage in such a way as they can interoperate in some well-defined area, right? So this means that we have a cluster-based deployment strategy. Now, this is actually kind of a problem in the traditional DY sense, because it means that we only really want to deploy our radios in certain places, which of course means that, you know, we can't reward you if you deploy your radios just in random locations, which means we have a smaller addressable market potentially in terms of, you know, who's going to actually be installing our radios. We think we've got a solution to that, by the way, which I'll get to in a bit. But this is absolutely essential. If you want to build a real functioning network, you absolutely have to have carefully thought through where your coverage is. And in fact, taking this one step further with XNet, we're working with professional deployment partners to make sure we sort of have, think of this being kind of like anchor coverage being deployed by professionals with, you know, typically these larger, more complicated radios, giving us serious SLAs in terms of service level agreements, you know, 99.95 service level agreements, so that when we show this network footprint to, let's say it's T-Mobile or Verizon or AT&T, they'll say, yep, looks good to us. And by the way, we validated it because you validated it using the same professional validation partners that we use, right? So we create this kind of anchor kind of footprint with professional installers who are also operating this for us. And then we let other people fill in this in and around this footprint with their own radios, maybe at a slightly lower level of reliability, but held down, if you will, by that those anchor tenants, but adding capacity, right? And that is awesome because that means that everybody gets to share in the connectivity benefits, everybody gets to share in the rewards. And it means that the underlying network quality meets the standards of our partners. So again, this is a really critical element. It means there's smaller areas where we can deploy our radios, but it means the end result is much more valuable. And wow, we're going to start in a few focused areas. I think it's like ink blots that we put on the map here and here and here. And those ink blots start to blow, to grow and to merge together. And then pretty soon we've got these big, robust areas of coverage. So yeah, the cluster strategy is absolutely essential. And it's another piece of the puzzle. Without that, again, the whole thing is going to fall apart.
Sure. So as you're in this earlier stage where you're really strategically trying to find the locations in which you're going to be able to build out a really robust network in those areas, how do you define success at this stage? And then as that transitions into being something broader, once you've maybe say, yep, we've kind of crossed the chasm of solving the problems with respect to those open areas, how does that success trajectory change over time for XNet?
Yes. Well, yes. And let me get a pull in one thing. So we see success, of course, we have to make money. We have to share that with our community to incentivize all of you, right? But there's something else really important that I haven't touched on yet, which in my mind is another like kind of essential piece of the puzzle, which is that our mission is also to connect the unconnected. So along with identifying these critical coverage gaps and what we call high ARPU, high average revenue per user areas, we've identified them in New York and Manhattan and in Miami and in Houston and in Los Angeles and in San Francisco, we're also in conversations with some Native American tribes here in California, who, the way, have access to their own spectrum. They actually have access to Band 41, which is really cool.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know
to
that.
Provide service there as well. So we have the XNet Foundation, which is a charitable organization dedicated to connecting the connected, has been assigned a third of our tokens, right?
Wow.
You know, like right off the bat, boom. That's big, which will ultimately govern the whole operation of our network as a DAO. And their mission is to, of course, working with XNet to do this connecting the unconnected thing, which is not just connectivity, it's also a revenue opportunity because these radios will also generate tokens, right?
Sure.
So anyway, that's another piece of this. But you asked about success. So for me, success is going to be ultimately, you know, business success, but also this collateral and at least in my mind, as important mission of providing connectivity where it really wouldn't be otherwise. Not just crappy connectivity in urban centers, but rural remote connectivity, right? Like Loon, right? That was the point of Loon.
Right.
But in very practical terms, we are turning on in the next, hopefully, call it 60 days, our first clusters here in the US, right? And I'm not sure, it's kind of a race. We'll see if whether it's Houston or San Francisco or Manhattan is the one that gets turned on first, but it's, you know, but the race is on. And our goal by the end of this year is to turn on 10.
Wow.
Now, each one of these will cost about $500,000 of money from you know, investors, if you will. Not necessarily money given to XNet as an entity, but people putting in the money to turn on these clusters. Each one will generate about $1 million in revenue every year.
Wow.
Right. And by the way, the mobile phone business is a great recession resistant business. I'll just put that out there, right? Everybody
sure.
needs connectivity and they pay for it, whether the stock market is up, down, or sideways, right? So, you know, we don't need a lot to get going. We've already gotten going. But by the end of this year, we think we're going to have like really serious, you know, revenue generation taking place through paid data on these clusters. And we'll start with 10 this year. Was this the plan? I mean, might be a stretch goal, but I think we can do it. Next year, it's more like it's in the 20s, right? And we're going to go from there. And we're not stopping here in the US. We are going to go global. We're just launching here in the US, but we see the same kind of opportunity in many, many markets worldwide.
Wow. That's really interesting. And I assume that as you're, one of the things that is really compelling about the XNet approach, as you've talked about handling backend billing, one of the questions that always that I always love asking people in the DY space is, as you are deploying or building, there's a lot of hurdles that come into play. There's even, you know, explaining what a decentralized network is, what the heck is cryptocurrency, a wallet, all of these different components that are a requirement for us to be able to build this decentralized model in a lot of respects. And so what are some of those hurdles that you are running into as a project, and how are you overcoming them? Is it a learning curve? Is there just because there's so many moving pieces, it's really complicated for people? What are some of those hurdles that you're running into now, and how are you thinking about addressing them moving forward?
Yeah, so you are right. I mean, gosh, when you dig under the hood, this is really complicated. It's really complicated for people who are as crypto native as they get. And by the way, we don't just see this as being a solution for a few crypto nerds in San Francisco, right?
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love me some crypto nerds, but we want XNet to become the next great global mobile network operator. So we have a couple of advantages going for us, right? One is that most of the people who use our service will have no idea they're even on a crypto-powered, you know, blockchain-incentivized, decentralized wireless network. They'll just pick up their phone and say, oh, huh, I used to only get a couple bars here, but now I've got 5 bars. That's pretty cool, right?
Sure.
And it will say AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, whatever their carrier is, right? So this means that in some ways, we're kind of co-opting, if you will, the customers of all these big mobile network operators. We let them on our network. We give them great benefits. And then their home networks are what's paying XNet. And XNet to them just looks like a bog standard, you know, mobile network player. Like, you know, I mean, yes, we tell them it's crypto on the back end, but they don't care. They're like, hey, you provide us great service. Here's some money, dude, right? That's the way they work, right? So basically, we've taken crypto out for the vast majority of the users of our networks, and we've taken the crypto out for the customers, our primary customers being these mobile network operators who just want to give us fiat money and get data on the networks. Now, the XNet entity, XNet Mobile Network Operator Company, what it does is it takes that fiat and it literally has to buy the XNet token to burn it into data on the network, right? So we've created the proper incentives to make sure that the crypto stuff is happening, right? It's just happening kind of below the surface for the vast majority of the folks who will start out interacting with our network. Now, that being said, I still have to explain the value proposition to you who might want to say install one of our, you know, wonderful, cool, sexy, you know, XNet nodes, right? And yeah, there's no getting around it. You got to understand something basic about crypto. You have to have a Polygon wallet. I can help you. I can walk you through that. You know, but so there's definitely that. Also, you have to have, you know, some basic IT skills. Like, you know, you're going to need to, like, you know, make sure you've got a decent network. And if you're deploying one of our larger radios on the roof, you need to either be or probably work with a so-called CPI, a certified professional installer like me. Hi, I'm a CPI, who can actually get your radio properly set up and registered with what's called the Spectrum Allocation System, Spectrum Access System, which is this entity that's run in the US that actually kind of regulates how the CBRS band 40 is used. So there is some complexity there, right? But we've kind of pushed that complexity onto our enthusiasts, people like you who really want to help build this network, right? And we insulate the beneficiaries of the connectivity from having to interact with that, at least for starters, right? So yes, crypto has a UX problem. It also honestly has as much of an education as a UX problem, really.
Sure.
But here's the thing. We expect there's going to be a future in the not too distant future after we grow our network where we really will start offering phone service straight to you. You'll be able to pay for this awesome plan, whether or not you have one of our radios at home, with crypto if you want, or with fiat, right? And we're gonna bundle together major mobile networks, perhaps AT&T, T-Mobile, and XNet, right? For an incredibly low price, which again, you can pay for in the tokens you might be mining at home, right?
That's awesome.
So there is going to be a future where if you want, you will be able to get your phone service paying in crypto. Actually, I think Helium is already in their MVNO deal with T-Mobile is going to try to pioneer this as well, where you'll be able to pay for a phone plan in crypto. And we hope that works out well. So we're going to do basically the same thing, except it won't just be T-Mobile. It'll be these other networks. And of course, a big underlying mobile network behind it will be XNet as well. So by the time we get there, I'm hoping that wallets have improved. Like I really love, I mean, we support MetaMask because you kind of have to support MetaMask. I actually really think that Phantom is a great wallet. And I really love that Phantom and some other wallet providers are now doing things like building in the option to simulate all of your crypto transactions before you say yes to them, which is a really important anti-fraud measure. And by the way, all of you should do that to keep your wallets from being drained by malicious contracts.
Right.
So I think wallets are getting better. And hopefully in a couple of years, when we have this great XNet mobile app that lets you get your phone service through XNet, through an eSIM is the underlying technology. We're going to have a really great, crypto wallet technology built in there that will make it super easy to use. And then, honestly, I have a feeling there's going to be a bunch of other people in the ecosystem who will be like, hey, you want XNet, but you don't want to pay for the equipment up front and you don't want to deal with crypto. How about this? Work with us. We're kind of like SolarCity, but we're for DY. Yeah. We'll just put up a great big, beautiful radio on your roof. And we'll pay you a little bit of money every month. And of course, we get to keep the tokens, but you get great phone service and we're paying you to do this.
Right.
So we think there's going to be businesses like that that will actually also let people who don't want to mess with crypto, but do want to be involved in the wonderful world of XNet to participate that way.
Yeah, I love to hear that. The synergies between being able to pay for a service in crypto, mine crypto as a function of being a part of the network is just one of the coolest to me. It's one of the coolest benefits that you get from this decentralized wireless where you can all, everybody can participate and be a beneficiary of it. I think that's super, super cool. But you touched on a couple of the challenges specifically around getting adoption, whether it's from deployers or from partners that you may be working with down the road. But I wanted to ask about, you recruited a pretty rockstar team of a lot of, call them TradWi experts, people that had spent a lot of time with big telco companies like the AT&Ts of the world that you mentioned. When you were recruiting them, what was that conversation like? And what got them excited? Was it around this crypto thing? Was it around building a decentralized network with wireless services? Was it the money opportunity? What was the kind of the pitch that you were giving as you were recruiting?
So here's the thing. Everybody in TradWi knows that it's kind of screwed up, right? I mean, like more than kind of screwed up, right? So I mean, except for the people who are like sitting in the AT&T board meetings and, sipping their cognac and saying, oh, I think our margins are 30%, even though it's a recession and we've got this horrible cost structure, darling. Could you pour me another glass?
Right.
Sorry, AT&T, we love you, but it's kind of a thing. No, seriously, right? So it's actually pretty easy to get people excited about fixing broken things. Like almost every engineer I've ever met, like one of their primary motivations, they started tinkering with things when they were 8 years old because they wanted to make something cooler, wanted to make something work better. So the pitch is not hard in terms of the excitement about, gosh, I want to fix something that's broken. The challenge, of course, is to say, hey, I see the future, come with me and change the world. Oh, what does that involve? Well, it involves taking a pretty big leap on creating your own cryptocurrency and, convincing a whole bunch of random strangers to deploy our equipment for us. So yes, that sometimes requires some selling. But the vision of a better world, better connectivity, better opportunities for folks, at the same, creating along with the company the charitable foundation that is going to be, the direct beneficiary. So sorry, effective altruists. I'm just not into this whole thing of I make money for like 20 years and give it away. Like, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. Those are screwed incentives. right from the very beginning. If you want to do something good, engineer that into your process. So the more you succeed, the more good you do. Okay, end rant. But that vision of building something that actually does good in the world actively, while at the same time solving a really important problem. While at the same time, just to be fair, if this works, making a metric crap ton of money, you know, if they believe in you, it's not too hard to sell the idea. So, yeah. So, you know, it is a little bit around, I think, my personal credibility, having built moonshots and done all kinds of things. But if you can believe in the vision, if you get the vision, if you understand it, it kind of sells itself, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely has me convinced. I think that's why we're all here. You've talked, we've talked a little bit about some of the incentive models and how important that is for the overall success. I'm curious, when you were developing with the team, the incentive structures and the, like the token allocations and the breakdown and investing structures, where were you looking for inspiration for things that have been done well, for things that have been done wrong, as you look to implement that as part of your broader business strategy moving forward?
Yeah, so you know, we were really inspired. I was really inspired by just the overall efficacy of like saying, hey, deploy the stuff, we're going to give you tokens. I mean, at a very basic level, wow, inspirational, it works. And you know, lots of credit to Helium for pioneering that, right? At the same time, we could learn from Helium's very aggressive reward structure. And what we learned from that is that if you kind of blow out all your tokens early, you're kind of stuck, because then you know, what do? You if you're Helium, you make a whole bunch of more tokens, right? Which is not good. You've now diluted the value of those initial tokens, right? So we were both kind of inspired by the overall idea there, but recognize that, you know, if you almost think about this in almost macroeconomic terms, right? If you really think about this almost as I'm designing an economy, right? I'm designing this kind of monetary system. You know, you can be inspired by some ideas from traditional economics or modern monetary theory to kind of realize there has to be kind of supply and demand in your currency. And the long-term incentives all have to balance out. So I know it's weird to say that I was inspired by my tokenomics by modern monetary theory, but that was definitely there as a component, right? You know, and then in terms of like governance, you know, I don't want to like you all heard the stories about, you know, like flash loan attacks on governance tokens for, you know, DAOs that have atomic governance, and some random Yahoo, you know, borrows a bazillion governance tokens and in one blockchain transaction creates and approves the transaction to give them all the money, you know, like stuff like that. So you know, we've really been we've had a lot of cautionary kind of stories about, you know, kind of the wrong ways to do governance. And so in conversation with some of the folks who've kind of been through that, we decided against atomic governance for our DAO. We're going to have a voting structure, but there will still be a governing board that then implements stuff for the DAO. But you know, at the same time, you know, again, I think there's a lot of great learnings around, you know, like if you look at the way kind of MakerDAO has evolved over time. I think, you know, that's an example of governance basically, you know, being done right. So I think we can look to, you know, to the largely organizations that have been through the really chaotic kind of early phases of crypto and, you know, taken the slings and arrows to kind of see where it's kind of how they have kind of navigated that and sort of what they've come to. So we're trying not to invent anything. Like I'm really trying to be very uninventive around the solutions. I'm trying to apply what we think of as being maybe not current best practices, but will hopefully become emerging best practices. And just to be honest, it's an experiment. Like if I told you that I had it all figured out right now, you shouldn't believe me, right? You know, our initial token distribution incentive structure, we took it to our community and they were like, what? What are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. That's way too skimpy. And we were like, actually, you kind of have a point. You're right. We're going to bump up the incentives because you are getting an early, you are taking an early risk. We shouldn't be trying to incentivize you like our network has already been successful. But at the same time, what we couldn't do is we couldn't just blow out our tokens. so that everybody could like get a payback inside 2 weeks on their excellent equipment, because we knew that that was incentivizing the wrong kind of behavior. Because again, what are you incentivizing? Are you incentivizing someone to be with you for at least a year? Which we do. We give you a big chunk of tokens and a 1 year lockup, you know, if you want to operate one of our radios. Or are you incentivizing somebody for kind of a pump and dump? And again, right from the very beginning, we thought to ourselves, look, a lot of crypto, for better or worse, has become a bunch of what's called like Burning Man theme camp builders, right?
Yeah.
You know, new NFT project, woohoo, you know, ape in, and they do it, and it's great. And they move on to the next thing. But sure. You know, like they assume all the tokens are blown out immediately and blah, 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 blah. We're cathedral builders, and there aren't a lot of examples of cathedral building on the blockchain, which is kind of sad to say. I think some L1s are real cathedrals. Like, of course, you know, oh my God, Bitcoin, you know,
yeah.
Satoshi Nakamoto, like how? I'm just so blown away. Vitalik, incredible. You know, the whole Ethereum thing, so blown away. And I think Solana is going to get there. I'm really impressed with their underlying design. Those are cathedrals. Like, they'll be around in 200 years. We're trying to build something that could be around in 200 years as well. So there aren't a lot of models for that we can point to right now, because many people haven't really taken that as the approach. But at the same time, there have been good examples of long-term thinking and incentives and so forth. So we're trying to borrow from those. And we're also listening to our community. So, hey, I'm probably doing it wrong. Please tell me and we'll get it better together, right? That's our commitment.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and one of the things that's, I imagine, such a challenge is that there are a lot of stakeholders involved, and I would imagine their priorities can oftentimes be conflicting from what's valuable now and what's needed in maybe a year and 5 years. And so as you're thinking through those incentive mechanisms, what's the balance and some of those trade-offs from a stakeholder management consideration so that you are building for what you can scale out now and in 5 years from now?
You know, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Everybody is totally kumbaya on our Discord, and there's like nobody bitching on Telegram about us at all. I mean, here's the thing. At the end of the day, you can't make everybody happy. And if you try to make everybody happy, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
So we've made a deliberate choice to really push the envelope a little bit and saying, you know, if you're deploying XNet, it's because you believe in the long-term vision. Now, that means that some of you won't join us at the beginning because you know, you would like us to be rewarding you as though you were an early Helium or Pollen participant. And we're not going to do that. We're just not.
Right.
Because we think that led to really bad behavior. We think it led to a whole bunch of radios being deployed in basements, you know, which it did.
Yeah.
You know, like we're trying to do something different. Now, if you can see that this potentially leads to much greater long-term value, if you get in early, we are going to be generous. We're going to be generous in kind of a token locked up way, not just in terms of tokens being thrown at you way, right? So again, we have made some folks not happy with us, very vocally not happy with us.
Yeah,
and that's a thing. Another thing that we've done is that, you know, people say, well, you know, why should we trust you? You're a highly centralized organization. And we are, you know, and by the way, we kind of have to be because the mobile network operations backend is a highly centralized thing. Mm. Also, as a practical matter, launching any new project is going to start out in a centralized way. The thing is, decentralization is our long-term goal, and we've got a plan for that. But more importantly, we have locked ourselves up. You know, my tokens don't unlock until 3 years after we, you know, started this whole thing, which is, you know, about 6 months ago, I think, from my token vesting. And then they unlock over the next 2 years, right?
Mm.
So if we were to pull what Pollen did, Pollen just kind of rugged their community, we would be rugging ourselves, right?
Right.
So in some sense, you can trust us not because we're all excellent people, although I think we are. You can trust us because we've engineered the incentives for ourselves, not just for the community, support long-term success and growth. So if you invest in us, you know, in any way, shape, or form, you are making a long-term investment. Certainly on the scale of blockchain projects, you're making a long-term investment. And we think that the benefits of that are going to be substantial because the size of the prize is huge in terms of the total size of the mobile network market here in the US, about $300 billion right now and growing. And the size of the prize in terms of the humanitarian benefit of connecting them connected, we think is also huge. So if you can, if you join us, if you help us with that, we think the upside, both in terms of money and in terms of positive externalities, is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I love that. That was really well said. Just to sort of bring it to a conclusion, what are some of the things specifically related to XNet that you're really excited about, whether it's this year or in some of the years that will follow? And then also on DY more broadly, are there things, trends, new innovations that you're seeing that gets you really excited? You're like, I love that this is what we're doing and why we're here.
Oh, I love so many things about this. I love that I feel like the whole tip-in, token incentivized physical infrastructure space finally feels like it's taking off. And ultimately, if it's going to take off, it's because there's a bunch of cathedral builders or maybe generation starship builders, doing this. And it feels to me like a very different space than just going to consensus and partying with the NFT degens. Don't get me wrong. Sure. Great parties. But I don't think it's the path to long-term value building. And I really like working with people who are focused on long-term value. I am really excited in terms of like what XNet is doing is that right now we're in the process of, you know, talking to folks about standing up our first sort of XNet foundation, helping a group here in California, a tribe here in California, get connectivity. It's going to take a little bit to get that done, but we're actually doing that. I'm really excited about that. We're standing up our first real clusters right now as we speak. There's kind of a race on between some of our folks who are installing in San Francisco and Zeppelin, who's helping us in Houston. And we're talking to Adrena and Skypack and some other folks in New York. So that's really exciting. And we're going to have one of these turned on, we think within 60 days. Wow. We expect to have paid revenue, like for reals, in not too long after that. That's going to be super exciting, right? You know, if we do this right, we could very well have millions of dollars in paid revenue on our network by the end of this year if we do this right. Now, things come up, but that's super exciting, right? If you think about that, right? Another thing I'm really excited about is the kind of the maturation of the DY space. You know, I've been having conversations with other projects and we're talking about, hey, let's figure out how to actually standardize stuff. Let's figure out how to think about interoperability. Let's think about the right ways to incentivize some of this more charitable stuff, right? And I'm hoping that we can create something called the DY Alliance, where we can work together to not only kind of work some of the stuff out in terms of like the kumbaya and standards, but also potentially to collectively invest in projects that will benefit the whole space. Let's say a marketplace that lets you like resell DY installations or things like that. And also to develop the open source code that ultimately should power everything. Because right now we're basically using a mix of open source and proprietary stuff on our network backend. It's the pragmatic thing to do right now. But ultimately I want there to be a completely awesome, fully open source network core that supports the full stack for interoperation with mobile. And I want that to be something that we and others develop open source, put it out there such that anybody who wants to can implement that. And then potentially, you know, in the future, if they want, use XNet as their MNO backend, or presumably by that time, there'll be some competitors who will also be offering those services. So you won't just be locked into XNet, because the more we can offer alternatives there, the less centralized the whole space becomes, the more robust the whole space becomes. And then ultimately we just eat the rest of telco, and of course decentralized wireless is how you get your 6G phone service. Like, yeah, I think somewhere in really backwards part of the world, they still have centralized MNOs trying to provide service, but nobody likes that, right? So that's the future that I want to get to. And I want to get to it within 10 years. So
wow.
Super ambitious.
That's amazing.
Wanna go fast.
Yeah, I love that. And I think we are on the trajectory, and it's fun just sort of being outside the space, watching it and seeing all the innovation and the development and the traction that's happening. It's it's pretty remarkable. So, well, this has been an incredible conversation. I've learned an immense amount just from listening to you both in this conversation and on different Twitter spaces and whatnot. So where can other people who want to continue learning, they want to learn more, where can they follow you, XNet, and stay involved and maybe get a little bit more information?
Well, you should definitely go and easiest way to find resource about XNet, go to xnet.company. I know it's a long URL, xnet.company. That's where our public facing website is. You'll find links there to our Discord, you know, our official Twitter and everything else. Or if you want to follow me, I am R Duvall at Twitter, at GitHub, on Telegram, on Medium, on LinkedIn. And I'm also kind of boring. Also on Mastodon, at sfba.social, I'm R Duvall. I'm actually a little more interesting there. I recently had a thread about the so-called spy balloon that you might want to check out.
It's want to check that out.
But love to get your comments and questions. You know, XNet will only succeed if it can succeed with its community. And we're, you know, really excited about this and looking forward to you, yes, you joining us in this journey. And it's going to be an awesome future.
It's going to be amazing. Well, we'll end it there. I think this has just been, like I said, it was so informative, really awesome. Every time I get to hear you speak about what you're doing and just the space in general, I'm intrigued because it fires off new synapses in my brain that I haven't connected before in terms of all the different considerations that are important for making the space a success. And you're certainly a pioneer in driving that. So really wanted to thank you. Make sure that you go and tune in to their website, to their Discord, Twitter, Mastodon, you name it, go follow. We'll wrap it there. If there's questions, leave them in the comments, and we'll be sure to sort of move them around so they get answered appropriately. But wanted to thank you again, and we'll see everybody on the next one. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tyler. This is great.
Thank you.